recorded live.
You're listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more. Welcome to episode 18 of the Geocaching Podcast. I know it's not on Tuesday like we normally have it, but that's because if you listened last week, you know that my wife and I's third anniversary was yesterday, and so we were actually out. We went and got some ice cream and took a walk, and it was a beautiful night to do that, so we actually did that, got out of the house, and we did not do a podcast last night. That's why we are having it tonight on Wednesday. Guys, if you're listening live, you can go ahead and call in. Use the PIN 436-222-4302. That's geocache02 on the PIN pad, and we'll get you live, and you'll also be entered into a drawing to win a geocoin. So with that, let's get on with the show. We have a guest on the line. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Brady. I go by the cache handle Moscow32. Caching for about a year out of the suburbs of Detroit, Michigan.
All right, and the reason that we have Brady on the phone today is because he actually went and saw the GPS maze, and I wanted to hear a little bit about it from someone who actually went and saw it. So can you tell us a little bit about the maze?
The maze is in the Minnetrista Museum in Muncie, Indiana. Happened to be there for a family get-together last weekend and thought we would stop by. We went with my grandfather, who's in his 70s, with my brother-in-law and sister, some other sisters, and my nephews, which are 2 and 1. So we had a great range there. The maze itself was it was impressive. It was all self-contained in one room. I was expecting that we would be able to use our GPS, but then I realized we were indoor and you're not going to get satellite coverage. But they did a good job of simulating the arrow on your GPS telling you how far away you were from the specific goals from the maze.
So when you got in there, they gave you a fake-like GPS, is that correct?
No, not really. They give you get an adventure card at the beginning. It tells you what the 4 goals are. And as you walk through the maze, there is a... Every once in a while, there's a format that will give you a heading and a distance to the 4 goals of the maze.
Oh, okay. So what are the 4 goals of the maze?
There are 4 goals that 4 secret locked rooms that you have to solve a puzzle to get into each of the rooms, usually involving finding a cache hidden in the room leading up to the secret room. Each one of the rooms represented a different aspect of GPS use and geocaching. One was the history of geocaching. One was the great outdoors, how you should prepare to be in the outdoors. One was the future of geocaching. And one was geocaching today.
Do you think that they did a good job simulating the geocaches that you need to go around and find clues? Would you, as a geocacher, did you think that they did a good job representing how geocaching actually is?
Yes, there were a good variety of different types of geocaches within the maze. There were several micros. One room had 3 caches in it with they were all ammo can sized caches hidden in a log and in a tree, in a stump. So there were plenty of ways that geocaches are traditionally hidden, and it gives people who are new to the sport, hobby, or whatever you want to call it, a good taste for what it's like to be out in the wild finding a geocache.
Can you tell us a little bit about each room? Like the room that you said shows about the history, what kind of, give us a little bit of clue on what was in that room, like what was the history of GPS that they represented?
The room with the history of GPS use started out with the first recorded maps and went through a history of maps, and then also included a history of the Navistar system, which is the satellite system that we use for the GPS. It went from humble beginnings of making maps on clay up to using our GPS now for geocaching. It also gave a pretty good explanation of how the satellite system works to give us precise coordinates.
Okay, so you said the other rooms were geocaching and GPS today, which I would assume would include, obviously, geocaching. What else was in that room?
There was a display with some geocoins, geo SIG cards, and the like, as well as travel bugs and that sort of thing. Gave a brief description of how geocaching works, what you're looking for. There was a video playing showing some people going geocaching and looking for their first cache in that room. I think there was also in that room a display of a few different types of GPS devices that you could use, including Magellan, Garmin, and phone GPS systems.
Okay. What in the room that had the future of GPS systems and geocaching, what all was in there?
That room had some of the earliest applications of GPS, including a yak-mounted GPS receiver that was used to map Mount Everest, as well as opportunities for people to draw what they would consider to be a GPS of the future. Not a whole lot in that room other than that. You can actually, if you go to the GPS Maze website, you can see some of the GPS of the futures that people who have gone through the maze have submitted.
Okay, that sounds cool. What, overall, like how big was the maze?
The maze is advertised at 2,500 square feet, but you have to remember that's 50 by 50 feet. So it's not a large area. I've wandered further than that looking for caches by myself.
So, yeah.
But it took us about half an hour to navigate through the full maze to find the four locked rooms and to get into them and spend some time in each of the rooms looking at the exhibits within them. It is a museum, and so those four corners were the main parts of the exhibit. Throughout the maze, there were banners that had things like the geocacher's creed, different aspects of GPS use as well, and occasionally some pretty scenic dead ends.
When you say that it's 50 by 50, is that including the rooms too, or is that just the maze part?
That includes the rooms. The Minotrist is not a big museum. And it's housed within one room within that, one of the exhibit halls there in Minotrista. It does take up most of the room, though. There is some space on the outside walls where they've got historic caches or caches in really cool places like Easter Island and at the Gaza Pyramids and things of that nature. But it does take up most of the room.
Okay. Would you say overall, like, how would you rate the maze? Like, would it be something that you'd want to come back to bring friends, or was it just an okay thing, or how would you rate it?
If I lived in the area and I were introducing friends to geocaching, I would definitely go there with them. I happen to be in the area for a wedding, a family get-together, and that's how I ended up there. I wouldn't have made the drive just to go to see the museum, mostly because a lot of what I saw was stuff that I already knew. Having geocached for a year now.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that it's going to convert a lot of muggles to geocachers? Like, will it do a good job at that?
It may get some people that would never have heard of GPS, geocaching, interested in the sport. I know my grandfather, I've taken him out a couple times geocaching, and he was interested in it and keeps talking about getting a GPS device to go geocaching. He had me show him the geocaching website when we got back and kind of show them how to find caches. It may also just increase awareness of the sport. I know a lot of times I'll talk about it, and they'll say, oh, yeah, I've heard of that. I think this gives another another venue for people to have heard of it and perhaps experience a little bit of what it's like to be out on a geocaching hunt.
Now, I don't know about you, but for me, nothing can simulate that actual excitement of finding like your first cache or being able to demonstrate what it's like to go geocaching than actually going on a hunt. So for me, I would say that if I'm going to convert any muggles, I'm probably going to take them geocaching with me. So
yeah, the nice thing about it is at Mina Trista, there are two geocaches on the grounds that you can take first timers to go find right after you've gone through the maze. And in Muncie, there are a lot of geocaches as it is.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I see what you're saying. So there's a lot of opportunity then after to further the experience after you go to the maze. You can actually go out and take some friends, you know, geocache hunting then.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Mina Trista does have some GPS devices that are there for checkout for anyone who's in the area that wants to try it for the first time. They can check them out for a period and just use them to go geocaching.
Now, does that cost anything, or is that just like a sign up, leave your wallet with them type of a thing, or is it going to cost?
I believe it's free included with the admission.
Okay.
And you do have to leave your credit card information with them just in case you lose or damage the GPS device.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think if they were my units, I'd probably do the same thing. So, well, do you have anything else you'd like to say about the maze or about your experience in the maze?
If you do go to the maze, there are 8 geocaches that Mina Trista has hidden around the area, and they have a discount code hidden within them on the inside cover of the geocaches. So it's well worth checking out Mina Trista as a user on geocaching and finding one of their geocaches to get that code if you are going to go visit.
Okay. Now that I know that, I will definitely, when I hit that area, I will go down and try to find some of their caches first. The next topic that I want to talk about briefly, and you can put your input on this too, it's not having anything to do with the maze, but a geocache that I found this previous week, the log was all wet, and I checked out the user, and they had actually moved out of my area. And so the first thing I did is I went ahead and contacted them and told them that I'd be more than happy to adopt their geocache. Is this something you've ever done?
I actually have moved out of the area and haven't had my geocache. It's still active and running out in Salt Lake City. I have a friend who has volunteered to maintain it, but he didn't want to take ownership of it.
The user that planted this geocache actually contacted me again and said that they would be willing to do that. So I actually now have adopted this cache. This is the first cache that I've actually adopted. I'm wondering, and I want to get other people's opinions on this. I'm probably going to do it, but should I leave the cache page mostly like all the same, except for if I, you know, change the container or something, then I'll obviously note it's a different container. But it's for overall, the cache page should stay the same, even though that it's there. It's got some of their information on it. Do you think that's a good thing to do? Keep it the same.
Well, it depends on how involved the original owners want to be with it. I think that a cache is a living thing, and as different events happen, you want to update it. If you're handier at HTML coding or handier at putting pictures and links into it, that might add to the experience. I wouldn't hesitate to do that as you're now the new owner of the cache. So it would depend on what the other cachers, how involved they want to stay with that cache. But being as that you're the new owner, you have a responsibility and the opportunity to make it your own.
Mm-hmm. I've kind of think I've taken the stance that I'm going to leave it for the most part the same, because they're the ones that actually planted it, and it's been around for a while, so I don't want to change too much for the people who have already found it. You know, I like looking back on the caches that I've found and kind of reminiscing about it. And so I'm gonna leave the same stuff on it. I did note that that I had adopted it and the date that we had adopted it, so that anyone looking backwards, you know, would know that. But I'm gonna leave the name of it the same. We also have another caller on the line who's in the chat room right now, who said that his first cache that he hid actually was one that he adopted. So his first hide was actually not one that he actually hid; it was one that was adopted. And he said that he left the name of the and of the original owner on the page, and he noted that he had adopted it. And he updated the coordinates too, since they were off. So he pretty much did the same thing. He kind of kept it the same, but he updated it to make it current, like you would if you were the original owner to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think I'm going to keep it pretty much the same. But that's the first time I had ever had any experience with adopting a cache. But I figured since the owner had moved out of town and the log was all wet, and the previous logs had said, this is wet, this is wet, this is wet, and no one had taken, you know, notice of it to actually come and replace it, that I would take the responsibility and contact them for adoption. So, and they were more than happy to let me adopt it. So that's just one thing that I knew experienced this week. Another thing, too, that I noticed this week on the geocaching.com website, and anyone who's actually been listening to this podcast for a while, if not, you can go ahead and find our feeds at geocachingpodcast.info. That's where all of our show notes and our feeds and stuff are at. But anyone who's been listening, we talked about this a few weeks ago, that they updated the maps onto geocaching.com, and they're now using the Yahoo Maps. And one thing that I'd said when we talked about it originally was, I hate the fact that the maps are so tight that you couldn't, that the original maps that are on the webpage are so tight that you can't see hardly anything, but like a very, you know, edge of where the cache is at, that mm-hmm. it would be nice to actually be able to zoom out right on the cache page. And as of this week, that's something that they actually implemented in on the cache page. If you notice under the maps, you can actually click, there's numbers, and you can click on them. It's not really noted what those numbers do, but if you click on them, the higher number will actually zoom out. Just like if you're on a Google map, you can, you know, drag the slider and move out. It's the same type of thing. So that was real. I found that real helpful. This, you know, so you don't actually have to go ahead and click and go onto the Google page and see the map. You can do that right on the cache page. And another thing, too, and I don't remember if this is like this before, but you can click right on the map now and click. And when you do that, it takes you to the Google Maps that you can slide around and has other caches in the area. So I thought that was a really cool thing that was updated this week. So with that, I think we are actually finished with this show. It's actually a short show this week. Moscow, I'm actually going to put you, I mentioned it briefly, but there's a list of people who are listening live, and GeoAddict, you're at it again, who are listening live to this podcast and participating. A list, we're actually going to be giving away a GeoCoin, an unactivated GeoCoin, at the beginning of July. So I'm putting you guys on the list, and after that we'll contact the winner and they can get their GeoCoin. So if anyone else, you still have one more time in this month to listen before the end of the month. So, oh yeah, and thanks, GeoAddict said thanks and congratulations on my third anniversary. Like I said, guys, it was my anniversary yesterday. One more time this month to be on the list. If you left to listen live, is it? My wife is correcting me now. She says there's two more. I have to look now. I'm curious. No, there's one more time. One more time. Like one more time to listen in this month live to be put on that list. Normally, this show airs live on Tuesdays, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Go ahead and go to our website, geocachingpodcast.info. And I want to thank everyone who is actually on the show today. And please join us again next week. And have a good week, safe, and keep on caching. Some of the music on the show today was provided by the Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.